ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So text 13
Indra
aham sarvadevanam indroham sarvadevanam indroham sarvadevanam vasunam asmi havyavat vasunam asmi havyavat vasunam asmi havyavat indroham sarvadevanam vasunam asmi havyavat adityanam it's got your name in there aham
vishnu
adityanam aham vishnu adityanam aham vishnu rudranam nila lohita rudranam nila lohita Rudranam nila lohita Adityanam aham
Vishnu
Rudranam nila lohita
Indroham
sarvadevanam Vasunam asmi havyavat Adityanam aham
Vishnu
Rudranam nila lohita When Srila Prabhupada used to give class, he'd let the chanting of the sloka go on for a long time. Sometimes you hear like 10 or 15 times. And the reason, one of the reasons, as I understand, is he wanted devotees to learn every single verse in the Bhagavatam. And he said that one time he was giving class, he said, you should get all these verses. So it's good to chant the verses and repeat them. Because you'd be surprised. I remember that, I think it's the third or the fifth verse in the Gita. I learned it just by listening to a Gita class where Prabhupada had many, many devotees just chanting the sloka. So sometimes you don't necessarily need to learn, sit down and learn them. You can just learn them by hearing them. Because that's the process. We hear and then we chant. We hear then we chant. Indra.
Indra.
Lord Indra.
Lord Indra.
Aham.
Aham.
I am.
I am.
Sarvadevanam among the demigods. Vasunam
among the
Vasus.
Ashmi
I am.
Havyavat
the carrier of oblations. Who would that be? Who carries the oblations? Yeah, Agni. When we say Swaha, apparently Swaha is the wife of Agni. That's what I've heard. And they say that, you know, she's there with Agni and they're carrying the oblations to Vishnu. So sometimes when we do fire yogas, we say Idam Vishnave, Idam Namama, that this is for Vishnu, this is not for me. There's one Homa you do, it's called Mahavyati Homa. And they were offering these three different oblations, four oblations actually. One's for Achyuta, Narayana, what's the other one? I remember when I'm doing it, but when I'm not doing it. But there's four different forms of the Lord, so we say Idam Vishnave, Idam Nama, you know, like that. Yeah, so Havyavat, the carrier of oblations, the fire god Agni. Adityanam,
among the sons of
Aditi. Aham.
I am.
And who is the most prominent of the sons of Aditi? Which Vishnu?
Vamana.
sons of Vishnu, the little one. Yeah? Vishnu.
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 Rudranam.
Rudranam.
Among the Rudras.
Among
the Rudras. Nilalohita.
Nilalohita.
What does that mean? But what does Nilalohita mean?
Blue.
Yeah, blue. Blue throat. Blue neck. How does he have a blue throat? Yeah. And what happened? Huh? Yeah, he kept it in his throat and made his throat go blue. So just imagine what happens to us if we take poisons like that. And he's Lord Shiva. Translation. Among the demigods, I am Indra. And among the Vasus, I am Agni, the god of fire. I am Vishnu among the sons of Aditi. And among the Rudras, I am Lord Shiva. Responsively, please. Among the demigods, I am Indra. And among the Vasus, I am Agni.
And among the Vasus, I am Agni.
The god of fire.
I am Vishnu.
Among the sons of Aditi.
And among the Rudras,
I am Lord Shiva.
So
many of the verses here don't have purports. Oh, this one does. Very long purport, actually. Lord Vishnu appeared among the sons of Aditi as Vamanadev. That's the purport. So this is an interesting chapter. This is the Uddhava Gita continuing. Basically, this whole canto, not all of it, but most of this canto is the Uddhava Gita. And again, we see, you know, because it's described as different Gitas in the Shastra, so we see there's the Bhagavad Gita. So we see there's quite a similarity between this particular chapter and one chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. This chapter is called the Lord's Opulence. What chapter in the Bhagavad Gita is it similar to? Opulences of the Absolute, chapter 10 of the Bhagavad Gita. So similar that actually Bhagavad Gita 10, 21, 22, 23 say the same things as this verse. Exactly the same, no different. I mean, it says, I think in 21, slight difference, it says, Adityanam Aham Vishnu. It says, of the Adityas I am Vishnu. So of the sons of Aditi, that's what the Adityas are, is the son of Aditi. So slight difference there. And it's very interesting that we see in the 10th chapter of the Gita, then Arjuna starts by glorifying the Lord, explaining his position. And he chants the Chatur Sloki of the Gita. Krishna chants the Chatur Sloki there. Those are verses 10, was it 8, 9, 10, 11, I think. 8, 9, 10, 11. And then as he's going through around about verse 19, 18, 19, something like that, then Arjuna asks Krishna to describe his opulence. So the same thing happens here, a little bit quicker though, because there's a bit of difference in that Arjuna, he didn't actually understand. He kind of had an idea, but he didn't really sort of understand fully that Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Obviously, this was Krishna's arrangement so that Krishna's pastimes could be enacted and that Krishna could speak the Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of all living entities. Yet we see that Uddhava, he was much more aware of Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, here in the Gita, in the 20th chapter, Krishna started to respond, whereas here in the Bhagavatam, in the 9th chapter, Krishna starts to respond. And he starts responding with exactly the same words, not just the same way, the same words. He says, what's the word? He says, Aham Atma Gudikesha. So here he says, Aham Atma Uddhava. Same words, not even the same way. He says exactly the same thing. And then he goes on and explains the exact same thing. And he says, it's really interesting that you're asking this, because Arjuna asked me exactly the same thing. And this is what I said to him. So he explained like that. And he says, so the first thing he says, Aham Atma, that I am the soul. I am the, when he says the soul, it means the super soul. That I am the super soul within all living entities. That I am this predominating living entity that's I'm the predominating soul in all this. Is actually, I maintain the life of all living entities. And therefore, he's explaining that actually everything is existing on my opulence. And then so he goes through here, same thing in the Gita. He goes through and in great detail explains his opulences. Yet, as we see at the end of the chapter, in this chapter here in the Bhagavatam, that Krishna says, but actually, even if I could count all the atoms, he said, he doesn't say even if, he said, even if I counted, because of course he can count all the atoms in the universe. He says, even if I counted all the atoms in the universe, I could not list all my opulences. It's interesting that Krishna himself, he has so many opulences that even he doesn't know how many opulences. There's one form of Krishna, or Balaram, called Anantasesh, who is, there's different descriptions. Sometimes it says he has 1,000 hoods, sometimes it says he has unlimited hoods. But there's a description where it describes that even if with his unlimited hoods, he's describing all the glories of Krishna, he'll never reach the end, because the glories of Krishna are ever expanding. So in the same way, the unlimited opulences of Krishna are ever expanding. And we see at the end of the chapter in the Gita, what's that verse? Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam srimad urjavam eva. That Krishna explains to Arjuna that he said, what is the use of all this detailed knowledge? Just understand that with a single fragment, a spark of myself, I pervade this entire manifestation. And all glorious, beautiful, and wonderful things are spring from but a spark of my splendor. So he's just trying to give Arjuna a concept of his greatness to get an understanding of who he's dealing with. You know, this is actually the supreme original personality of Godhead from whom everything emanates, as we see. It says, Aham savasya pravo matasavam pavatate iti matva vajante mam buddha bhavasma. That I am the source of all spiritual material worlds. Everything emanates from me, Krishna explains to Arjuna. Everything. Everything you know about, everything you can see, it comes from Krishna. And I was just listening to a class the other day in Srila Prabhupada. He was answering somebody's question. I can't remember what the question was. It was actually here in Melbourne, actually. It was an interesting class. And what struck me about the way that Srila Prabhupada answered the question was, for him, the concept or the existence of God wasn't a theory. It was fact. And that everything that was in existence was just a manifestation of Krishna's various shaktis. He was just, that was just the fact of it. You know, Prabhupada was just so convinced, and the way he answered it just carried that conviction. And we see that Krishna is explaining here to Arjuna, or in this chapter he's explaining to Uddhava all the glorious things that are in this universe, all the powerful things. And there's one verse I was reading before, and I was just reflecting on it, how he's saying that, you know, of all subtle things, I am the jiva, the soul, because it's the most difficult to understand. There's so many subtle things in this world, and people, even scientists, they can understand so many of these subtle things. They've even, you know, they have these things where they can detect auras. You know, I don't know what they do with the chroma photography or something. I can't remember what it is, but they can see the aura around, like the energy field around living energy, which is a very subtle thing. But no matter how advanced they are with their science, they still cannot find the soul. The soul is so subtle. So Krishna says, of all the subtle things, I am the soul. And then he says, of all the things that are difficult to control, what do you think it is?
Mind.
The mind. Why? Chanchalam himana Krishna pramati balavadridam. The mind is flickering and very difficult to control. And then Arjuna says, I think even more difficult than controlling the wind. I was walking, you know, the storm we had the other night. I really liked, you know, storms and lightning and stuff like that. So I went for a walk in the storm, you know. And the wind, I was out on the pier here, Kerford Road Pier. The wind was unbelievable. It was practically blowing me over. You know? So try and stop it. You know? Build a brick wall and see if you can stop the wind. Yeah, brick wall will get blown over. Not possible. I mean, sometimes, you know, like, I remember living in Queensland years ago, and they regularly get cyclones and stuff like that, and you just see cyclones just Darwin, you know. It was in the 70s or the 80s when Darwin got hit by that cyclone. Practically nothing left standing in the city. Yeah? So, you know, there's nothing that man can make that can stop the wind. So again, he says that of difficult things to control, that I'm the mind, because it's almost impossible control. But we can see that someone who's actually a spiritual, someone who's spiritually advanced, can actually see the soul, can understand the soul. Someone who's spiritually advanced can control the mind. Why? Because they actually tap into the spiritual potency of Krishna. On our own, we cannot actually achieve these things. As it said, there's a verse in the 7th canto, I think it is. How does it go? Matiya Nikrishne Parato Sotova Mitobi Vajeta Griha Vratanam. That is saying that Matiya Nikrishne, they do not know Krishna, they cannot realize Krishna by their own endeavors, by the endeavors of other, or by a combination of both. They actually need to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual personality. So a person cannot understand the spiritual nature by their own endeavors. And there's many people trying to do this, and basically they call them jnanis. They're trying to understand the nature of the absolute by philosophical speculation. And from speculations, generally they come to erroneous conclusions. As we see with so many of these different spiritual paths and things like that, they come to so many erroneous conclusions. When I was younger, I used to read a lot of books on philosophy. I was actually talking just with Gopa Brindesh about a book his father's got called The History of Western Philosophy by a person called Bertrand Russell. And Bertrand Russell was a classic speculator. And he's got this book he compiled called The History of Western Philosophy. And he actually speculated about all the conclusions of all these other philosophies. But when I was reading this book, I was also reading another book at the same time. And it was about ancient Greek philosophers. And there was one of these ancient Greek philosophers, I can't remember his name. It was really interesting. And he was saying that in his view of the world, he was like making so many different conclusions. And one of the conclusions he came to is actually women must have less teeth in their mouth because their mouth is smaller. But the really interesting thing is, he never bothered to actually have a look in their mouth, which would have been the simple way to figure it out. Rather than doing that, he just speculated a conclusion. So rather than actually, trying to understand it through empiric knowledge, by actually seeing, he just speculated on the conclusion. And so we see the same is there in the spiritual path. Krishna explains in the Gita, he says, Tadvidi pralipanateena padiprasthenase upadekshanti teyaganam jnanas tatpadashina. He says, jnanas tatpadashina. Because they see the truth, they actually understand how things are, then they can give you the truth. So in order to understand the reality of something, then you just ask somebody who knows. It's just like, if you want to understand how to use a computer, do you just turn it on and speculate and start pressing buttons and do this and do that? And, this is erase. What does this one do? I press that and see what happens. Erases everything. You've got nothing left. No, you ask somebody who knows. In order to drive a car, what do? You go and get someone to teach you how to drive a car. You need to find someone who has the knowledge. So spiritual science, it's no less of a science than anything else. If you want to understand any field of science, can you become qualified as a scientist, as a PhD or as a neurosurgeon without learning from somebody who's qualified? I mean, of course, you can, like anyone with a computer these days and a good printer can print up any kind of certificate they like. It looks very official and pucker and everything like that. And people do that. They do things like that. Like right now in India, there's a lot of trouble with visas. Westerners getting visas because there have been people who are misusing. They make up their own letter of invitation and they give it to the Indian embassy and telling people that, this is a letter from MISCON, so I'm actually authorized. And they've found out about this. People have been misusing it. So now people are having a lot of difficulty getting visas, long-term visas. So we see that, you've got a computer, a printer, you can practically make any type of certificate. People are making driver's licenses and all sorts of things. But does that give you the qualification? If you make up your I've got a PhD in neurosurgery and put it up on your wall, do you think that person can cut open your head and operate on your brain? And if you knew that, would you let them? Interestingly enough, though, people won't allow people like that to deal with their body. They won't allow them to operate on their body and stuff. And yet, when it comes to a much higher science, the science of the body, no, you can't touch. Science of the self, anything that does, you know, that you can be, you know, you don't have to have any qualification, you don't have to know anything, you can have your own ideas. And as such, it's a science that's so much more important, it's so much more refined than the science of the body, because the science of the body is a very gross science to deal with matter, to deal with the senses. Yeah? But the science of the self is a very, very refined science. Therefore, it requires someone who has a higher intelligence. Yet we see that it's quite common that people will allow anyone with practically no qualification whatsoever to become their guide in the spiritual science. And we see there's so many people who are speculators, so many people who are claiming to be incarnations of God. You know, some people, they just make up their own. You know, that there's, anyway, I don't want to sort of name any specific schools of thought, you know, because this goes out on the internet and so many people can hear it. It's like, you know, you do get emails back about these things. Something, you said this, and but we see there are many, many different groups there. Like there's one group I know where the founder of the group found his Shastra in his backyard, dug it up. Yeah? What's the validity of such a thing? Yeah? Or other people, they just, you know, oh, I had some revelation, I saw God. Yeah? I saw this, I saw that. You know, I mean, how can you trust these things? How can you trust these people? They say something that sounds good, they use some fancy words. You know, in the Gita, it describes them as Veda Bhatta Arata, the flowery words of the Vedas. They're able to present things in such a nice way. I remember my brother, he was into a certain spiritual group, and he gave me some of the books, and I was reading the books, and they were, you know, interesting words. It sounded really nice, you know, and the God showered flowers from the sky, and it just sounded really, really like utopic, you know. But what was he actually saying? Nothing. He was actually saying nothing at all. Yeah? It's kind of like, you know, these politicians when they make promises, you know, it sounds really good. But if you actually analyze what they're saying, what are they saying? They're very expert. They know how to say a lot of words and make it sound really promising. But if you actually analyze it, if you get someone who's expert with English language, like we've got Umapati Maharaj, he's editing the deity worship handbook right now. And there was one statement there which I found was very interesting, because I never thought of it like this. It said, you know, it's like when you sort of chant Gayatri in the morning, don't sit in your bed because beds are inherently unclean. So Maharaj said, but actually that would mean that from the very point that a bed is made, it is unclean. But so inherently is the wrong word. So he can analyze it in such a way and say, but actually this is not what the word means. So if you analyze, if someone who understands the language analyzes what a politician says, they actually say nothing. They're very expert. They put together in such a way that it sounds big, but you can't pin them down to a promise because they didn't make a promise. They're very good at that. So in the same way, you read these books by these Mayavadis, and there's no substance to it because they're not actually saying anything. They're just using fancy, flowery words. So, in order to understand the supreme spiritual science, one needs a person who understands the science already. It's just like, in order to become a brahmana, you have to associate with a brahman. You cannot do it on your own. The spiritual science is like that. It's not, you know, the Bhagavad Gita is a do-it-yourself kit of going back to Godhead. There's no such thing as a do-it-yourself kit. You need to learn the spiritual science from a qualified spiritualist. And, of course, we see here in the Gita, Arjuna has the most qualified teacher. Here in the Bhagavatam, Uddhava has the most qualified teacher. Krishna himself is explaining to Uddhava about himself. And who knows better than Krishna? Nobody knows better. So he has the perfect teacher here. And he's explaining all his various opulences. And what's the point of explaining these opulences? Why is he going into such detail to explain all these things? Just so that we can think, oh wow, look at all this wonderful stuff. No, it's the main reason is so that when we see any of these opulences in nature, we think of Krishna. Yeah? It's just like, you know, for a materialistic person, they'll look at some opulence, they'll see, oh, here's a beautiful person, here's a beautiful man, here's a beautiful woman, let me enjoy. But a spiritualist, when they see the same thing, they say, oh, here's a beautiful woman. Isn't Krishna's creation so wonderful that he can make such beautiful things? Here's a handsome man, a strong man, you know. Krishna says in the Gita, he says, I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and Passion of ignorance or passion of pride? I don't remember. No, that's not the verse. I'm the strength of the strong, which is devoid of passion and passion and desire. Right. So he says that I'm the strength of the strong, which is devoid of. So he's clarifying what is. This is what I am. Devoid of these things. Devoid of passion. Devoid of ignorance. Yeah? So Krishna is explaining clearly his situation. Here he's saying, you know, of the Adityas, I am Vamanadeva. Of the Rudras, I am Shiva, because Shiva is actually a qualitative incarnation of Krishna. That there's an interesting explanation is given that Krishna is never touched by the modes of material nature. It says that, you know. Yet, if that were the case, he would be incomplete, because there would be something that he can't do. So, when he comes into contact with the mode of ignorance, that's Lord Shiva. He manifests as Lord Shiva. So Krishna can do everything. Krishna is everything. Krishna manifests himself in so many different ways here. And we see how this is being described. And then when we get to the end of this chapter, in the last few verses, then the Lord summarizes all these things. And he says that, you know, here he's talking about specific groups of things. And he's analyzing. He says, of the Adityas, of this, of the Rudras, I am that. And he's being very, very specific about all these groups, and I'm all these things. And then at the end, he just talks about in broad categories, so that Uddhava gets a very, very clear understanding of who he actually is. And then he basically goes on to say, but you know, you have to focus on self-realization. Don't become absorbed. Because people who become absorbed in these things, they identify based on their mind and their senses. By their sensory perception, they see these things as being, oh, this is good and this is bad. Therefore, as Vishwachakravarti Thakur explains, that these things actually are not opulences, because these are connected with a person's mind. But when one actually sees these things just as great things, especially the devotee, they see these things in relation to Krishna. As he says, all glorious, beautiful and wonderful creations, they spring from my splendor. And if we see like that, then this is an udipan, or an impetus to remember Krishna. So that's the point of this chapter, is to help us to become fixed in this remembrance of Krishna, to see how Krishna has manifested himself in so many different ways in this world, just to help us to remember him. And even we see that Prabhupada explains that, you know, for primitive people who are not necessarily so advanced in religious principles, they may see a wonderful thing in nature and they worship that as being supreme. But that is like a lesser religious principle. It's still some degree of religious principle, but it's lesser. Whereas a devotee will see that how this is connected to Krishna. And this is the purpose of all these descriptions, to see, you know, we see anything wonderful, we see a strong man, we think, oh, this is Krishna's power, this is Krishna's vibhuti. Yad yad vibhuti mat sakvam, he says, vibhuti mat, this is my energy. Vibhuti means energy or opulence. So it's coming from Krishna. So we need to see how everything, you know, you see someone who's very intelligent. Where does the intelligence come from? It comes from Krishna. If someone has very good memory, where does that come from? What does Krishna say in 15:15? Savashichaham hridas sanavishtam mata smriti gyanam apoanam cha. Knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness, they all come from me. Everything comes from aham savashtra prabhavo. Everything emanates from Krishna. So these chapters here, the 10th chapter in the Gita and the 16th chapter here in the 11th canto, are simply reminding us, simply reinforcing that understanding of how everything comes from Krishna. And that's why I found that class the other day of Srila Prabhupada very interesting. It wasn't like he was expressing this theoretically. It was just fact for him that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead and everything comes from him. Everything exists, it rests upon him. Sutri manikanadi bhara, says Nikita. Just like pearls on a thread. You know, you've all heard that analogy. That like everything rests on Krishna, just like pearls are resting on the thread. You don't see the thread when you see the pearls. But if you take out the thread, what happens? They all fall down. Just like sometimes the pujaris, when the string breaks and the pearls, and all the pearls, they fall off and they all tick, 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 and they all bounce out and they come out down the stairs and things like that. You know? So it's the same sort of thing. If we don't, you know, if there's no thread in the pearls, then there's no string of pearls. There's just single pearls. And in the same way, you know, you don't see the thread. And in the same way, for someone who, you know, but someone who knows can see, can understand that even though they can't see the thread is there. And it's just like, I remember reading how Prabhupada was when he was a child, he saw an aeroplane in the sky. And he just thought it was a magical machine. He didn't understand there were people in the aeroplane. Then somebody told him there were people in the aeroplane. So when we look at an aeroplane, we know there's someone flying the aeroplane. It's not just some thing up in the sky, you know, some silver metal bird that's doing it. No, there's living entities piloting it, you know. So someone who has knowledge can understand. So in the same way, someone who knows about the thread, the pearls, understands there's a thread holding the whole thing together. So in the same way, in the material nature, we see people who are ignorant. They just think it's all going on by automatic. You know, it's just going on by chance, they say. You know, that like one day there was a cloud of gas. And the cloud of gas started to swirl and swirl and swirl, and as it was swirling, it became condensed and condensed and condensed and condensed, and suddenly there was an explosion, and voila, you have the material creation. And actually, Sri Ramaraji, when he talks about that, he says the theory of Frankenstein. Because we see, like, you know, if you have an explosion, what comes from an explosion? Destruction, chaos, a big mess. If you throw, you know, an explosive device into a printing shop, will you get an encyclopedia or a dictionary coming out of the other end? Of course not. You'll just get a mess with ink and bits and pieces of stuff splattered everywhere. So this theory they have about, you know, how it all happened by chance, it was an accidental thing, you know, but they haven't been able to, in their laboratories, they haven't been able to accidentally create life. They haven't been able to accidentally create anything. No. Do you think they just, like, you know, they just put all the things in there and they turn on the gas or whatever, and they just walk out and leave it alone, and you know, their experiment happens and they get a Nobel Prize for it? No, they apply their consciousness to it. You know, like all these people are getting Nobel Prizes. They've spent time and energy. They spend so many hours trying to figure out these things and formulas and this thing and that thing and their computers and stuff, and spend, you know, days, weeks, months, years sometimes, their whole lifetime trying to understand something. So they're applying so much time and energy to understand how something works, yet they think it all happened by chance. And, you know, that's not just like, you know, something I don't, you know, that I theoretically, you know, have some idea of. I've actually had practical experience. I remember speaking to a scientist at the airport in Perth years ago, a scientist from the CSIRO, and he was a smart man, but he was so convinced that everything happened by chance. He couldn't see. It's like, what's that, in the Gita Krishna says that knowledge is stolen by illusion. Maya prahita jnana. They have jnana, maya prahita is covered by maya prahita. It's covered over. But even though there's so much knowledge there, even though pashanapi in the pashati, it's right in front of their eyes, they can't see it. You know, I think I've explained this once before. It's like this scientist, his speciality was the I think it was called tectonics of the cell wall or something like that. You know, it was like single cell living entities. He was like, you know, exploring all about, you know, all the, how the chemistry and all the mechanics and stuff worked inside the cell wall. And he was explaining to me how complicated it was, you know, because he was sitting there using his laptop. I said, is it more complicated than computers? Oh yeah, more complicated. And then jumbo jet pulled into the next gate, and I said, is it more complicated than a jumbo jet? And he said, far more complicated. You can't believe how more complicated. And so then I thought, well, this is a good opportunity to try and, you know, introduce him to the concept of God. And so then I explained to him, and so, you know, you can see that with a computer, it took a man to make that. And he agreed. And he said, and with the jumbo jet, it took so many, you know, men with a lot of intelligence to make that. And he agreed. And he said, so you can see with the cell, you know, it's so much more complicated. What kind of intelligence does it take to make that? And he says, no, it all happened by chance. These guys are just so foolish. You know? That, like, you know, they've got this knowledge, they can see, you know, oh yes, so much is required to do this, and they can see how complicated it is. But because they've got this dogma, you know, it's all by chance, you know, all their authorities tell them it's by chance. They can't see. They can't see past the end of their nose. They can't see, this is what the dogma says, so this is the way it must be. They don't have this deeper understanding. You know, so This is the way it is to materialists, is they cannot actually understand the situation in this material world. Only someone who's actually a spiritual, only someone who's on the spiritual path can actually see things as they are. And this is part of Brahminical knowledge. And we see, there's a purport here in the Gita, where, because in yesterday's verse it was talking about Gayatri, I think. Was it yesterday or the day before? I can't remember.
Yesterday
I was talking about the Gayatri Mantra. And then Prabhupada explains the Gayatri Mantra very nicely in the 10th chapter. And he talks about how the Gayatri Mantra is a very special mantra, because the Gayatri Mantra is meant for realizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because we see in the Gayatri Mantra, there's both Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana is contained there. And these mantras connect one directly with Krishna. And even we see the sixth mantra that Gaudiya Vaishnavas chant, which is called the Gopal Mantra. There's a whole vilas in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Hari Bhakti Vilas is 20 chapters or 20 vilasas, and one of those vilasas is dedicated to mantras. And the primary discussion in this vilas on mantras is how this Gopal Mantra is non-different from Krishna. So by chanting these mantras, one can come to realize Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explains, though, that in order to chant these mantras, one must be qualified, and this qualification is to become a Brahmin, to be purified and situated in the mode of goodness. So in order to gain the benefit of chanting these mantras, one actually needs to be situated in the mode of goodness. And that way the mind, etc., the senses become peaceful enough to actually be able to contemplate the inner meaning of these mantras, the deep meaning of these mantras. So one who is actually qualified can understand this knowledge as it's being presented. One who's not qualified, Pashanapi na Pashati, even though the knowledge is right there in front of their face, they can read these books, they can, you know, so much. And we see there's so many commentators. Srila Prabhupada, when he first came to the West, said there's you know, over 700 versions of the Bhagavad Gita and not one pure devotee. And then I come here, I'm just one simple Bengali man, and I write, you know, my commentary on this Gita, and so many pure devotees have come. So we see the benefit, you know. If you have a pure devotee, he's presenting the knowledge because he has his Gyananas Tattvadarshana, because he has knowledge, because he can actually see the truth. It's like Prabhupada, he explains often, he uses the example of microphone, because when he's giving the class, the microphone is in front of him. So it's just like with a microphone, you know. Anyone here looks at the microphone, and it's, you know, it's a black stick with a grey ball, grey silver ball on the end of it. That's about the limit of your knowledge. If you speak into it here, you know, by electrical waves, it goes over there and becomes louder. But you don't actually understand how it works. But someone who understands the whole, you know, the whole thing, like in the end here, there's a capsule, it's called a transducer. It's called a transducer because the transducer, you know, converts the moving air energy into electrical energy. It's what it is. It's a, you know, there's a coil, a very thin coil called a voice coil, and it moves in between two magnets in and out like that because of the pressure. And that then, you know, the magnet, you know, working on the coil creates an electrical charge, and they put that through various amplifiers and high pass and low pass filters and all this, you know, like we can go into great, and I can give you a good understanding of what a microphone is like and why it works and why it does what it does and why it doesn't, you know, make really high pitched sounds, really low sounds, etc., etc. You know, there's all, and why it doesn't just feed back because there's all these, you know, speakers in the room, you know, because they have these holes at the back which are phase cancelling holes and stuff like that. So it's very, you know, interesting science about the way a microphone works. Yeah. But anyone else sitting in this room who doesn't know, it's just a microphone, it just does what it does. And if you try to explain it to someone else, you'll just say, oh, it's a black stick about this long and it has a silver grey ball on the end of it. Yeah. I remember in science, when I first did science at school, they were talking about this empiric observation and how to explain something to someone else. So they had this analogy there. It was just say, you know, for instance, a spaceman has come down and he wants to light fire. And you're trying to describe to him firewood. You say, well, it's, you know, it's round and it's about this long and it's like this and it's like that. And so you give them an incomplete description or an uninformed description because you don't really know. So then they go around, they're looking for round things about this long, and they find a couple of sticks of dynamite and they stack them up together and they can start to light their fire. So, of course, disaster will result. So it's because they don't have knowledge. They don't have deep knowledge, so they can't actually transmit. If you don't understand something, how can you transmit that knowledge? So we see the deeper a person's realization is on a particular topic, the more they're able to transmit knowledge. So especially in the spiritual subject, you know, we need to find someone who actually understands in order that we can understand. Otherwise, if we're just, you know, taking our knowledge from someone who's in illusion, we will also become deluded. That's just the natural outcome. So if we want to understand the spiritual science, we need to understand someone who's in factual knowledge of the absolute truth. And then Krishna makes the same point here in the 11th canto, I think it's later on. Anadi vidya yukta sha purusha shatma vedasu. He's saying that because a person who has been in ignorance since time immemorial is not capable of effecting his own self-realization. That's our position. We've all been in ignorance since time immemorial. We have no idea who we are. Everyone is thinking, I am this body. Isn't it? And if you don't believe that, just analyze your activities during the day. See what you do. Is every single thing you do simply for the benefit of Krishna, simply for the satisfaction of Krishna? Or do you do some things for the satisfaction of the self? Do you do things for the pleasure of your body, for the pleasure of your senses? You can analyze your activities by that. So the fact is that, okay, we may have some knowledge about Krishna. We may understand that, yes, I want to be Krishna's devotee. I want to be a servant of Krishna. I want this, you know. But looking at our activities, we can easily understand what our degree of realization is. And if we're in any way, see, bhakti means we do something only for Krishna. Rupa Goswami, he gives this definition in the beginning of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the introduction, which is actually the first chapter of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And anything which has any other motivation save and except to satisfy Krishna is on the level of sadhana. It means there's an impetus besides Krishna. But if the impetus is to serve Krishna, then it's raganuga. If the impetus is the pleasure of Krishna, it's raganuga. So we can see with ourselves, okay, we may be performing sadhana, but because we have an impetus other than to satisfy Krishna, it's somewhat on the bodily platform or quite a lot on the bodily platform. There's gradations there. So, I forgot where I was going there. Oh yeah. So the thing is, like, without, as I'm saying in that verse from the Bhagavatam, that because the person who's been covered by ignorance since time immemorial, we've been here for so long, we can't trace out the beginning. We've got no idea of how long we've been in this material universe. Because we've been covered by ignorance since time immemorial, we are not capable. Avidya, ignorance, anadi, since time immemorial, there's no beginning to it. They're not capable of affecting their own self-realization. Therefore, there must be someone who's in factual knowledge of the absolute truth, who knows who Krishna, not some theoretical understanding, but who knows Krishna. And that's the thing I got from this class I was listening to the other day. The way that Prabhupada answered this question, he knew Krishna. He knew the conclusion. He knew who Krishna was. He knew Krishna's potency. He knew Krishna's energy. He knew how Krishna acts. I mean, he knows how Krishna acts. It's not like it's theory for him. It's not like it's maybe this, maybe that. And most of these people like that. You know, you ask them a direct question, well, maybe it's like this, maybe it's like that. I think this, I think that, perhaps this. You know, it all starts to sound a little bit like a fairy tale, you know. Once upon a time in a far off kingdom, long, long ago, there lived a little princess, fairy princess in a castle. You know, it's all like fairy tales. But no, they're not in factual knowledge of the absolute truth. And not only do they need to be in factual knowledge of the absolute truth, they must be able to impart this knowledge to you. So, Sanatana Goswami, he said this about Thakur Haridas. He said that some people, they behave nicely, but they don't have realization. Others have realization, but they don't behave nicely. He said, but you, my dear sir, you both have the knowledge and the behavior. Therefore, you're qualified to become the spiritual master of the entire world. So this is the point, is we need to understand this knowledge in the proper way. Otherwise, it won't bear fruit. And the proper way is through receiving it from a qualified personality. So we see here that, obviously Uddhava is receiving it from the most qualified person, and Arjuna is receiving it from the most qualified person. And if we receive it in the same way, then we'll also get the same benefit as they got from hearing it directly from Krishna, because there's no difference. It's just like, Prabhupada would use the example of the electric wire. Because the electric wire is ultimately through the switches and the whole thing is connected to the powerhouse, it's as good as contacting the powerhouse. If you touch the wire, you'll get electrocuted. It's as simple as that. So, if we receive this knowledge in an authorized way, then it's as good as receiving it directly from Krishna, and we'll get the same benefit as did Uddhava and as did Arjuna. And the ultimate purpose of this knowledge is to bring us to this understanding of how Krishna is the Supreme Person of Godhead, and that everything is an expansion of His energies. The reason something is so wonderful in this world is simply because it is Krishna's Shakti. There's no other purpose than that. Why is the material nature so wonderful? Because it comes from the most wonderful person. Why are we able to do wonderful things? It's because we are the servants of the most wonderful person. Because everything we have comes from that wonderful person. And that was Prabhupada's point when he was dealing with the scientists. He says, why do they deny Krishna? We just have to accept that, yes, this is Krishna's energy. This has come from Krishna. The reason I have anything good, the reason I can do anything wonderful, is because of Krishna. That's the only difference. You just give credit to Krishna. It doesn't mean you do anything different. You just give the credit to Krishna. And that's perfection. Okay. Is there any questions or problem?
Just contemplating on the fact that we're talking about there's so many, when Prabhupada came, there were 700 versions of Gita, and then there's so many speculators, and while we said that, okay, when you go to a doctor or whatever, you see, you validate the certificate, whatever, I'm just thinking, why is it that, that there is no certification given by God to anybody that, he is the only qualified person, or, this is the only qualified way. Why is there no certification like that? Isn't that a cause of confusion itself? Or is the disciplic succession the only certification? How is this?
It's just like, because you use the example of going to a doctor. So I'm sure we've all had experiences of going to doctors, and you go to one doctor and they'll say, yes, this is your problem because of this. Okay, fine. You go to another doctor, they'll say something completely different. So they've all got the same certificate, they all went to the same schools, have to pass the same exams. What's the difference? I think for some it's the motivation with which they do it. Some of the doctors, it's just a good way of making money. And you'll see they put people through the surgery so fast. I remember going to an Ayurvedic doctor in India once, and he must have spent more than 30 seconds with each person. And he was charging quite a high price, and some doctors are like that, it's like if you get more than a minute from them, you're doing really well. And they're just like, and actually this was going on in the early days of Medicare, when Medicare first came out, and so they had to put, I think, is it 15 minutes? Each appointment has to be 15 minutes or something? There's a minimum time the appointment's allowed to be, because they were just like processing people through like bang, 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 bang all day long, hundreds of people, and they build up to Medicare, and they're making a fortune from it. So even though there's a certification with doctors, you still get quacks. Isn't it? There's plenty of them. I was getting some, I got a medical condition in my stomach, and it was giving me some burning in the chest, and I was going to one doctor, so it was a heart condition. You have to go off and get your heart checked out. I had the other stick the pipe down your throat, and the guy said, oh no, you've got reflux. There's quacks. So in the spiritual life also there's quacks. But one thing that's very interesting, there's a class that Prabhupada gave. Where is it? I can't remember the class. It's not a class. It's in one of the purports in the 14th chapter. Vishnath Chakravitakur's comment on it. I think it's probably about the 4th or the 5th verse in the 14th chapter here. And in Vishnath Chakravitakur's comment on that, he talks about how one who's surrendered to Krishna, completely surrendered to Krishna, he becomes blessed with Krishna's bonus. And he uses that verse, Krishna Shakti Vinayatahe Pravadam. So we see that someone who's actually given their life, and Prabhupada would say, someone who's canvassing on Krishna's behalf, that they actually become blessed with the Shakti of Krishna. So actually, in a sense, they're Shaktivesh, because they've become blessed with the potency of Krishna. And then it says that, what's that verse? Kali Kala Nama Rupa Krishna Ava, no. Kali Kala Radama Krishna Nama Sankitan. Krishna Shakti Vinanahe Tahe Prabhatan. That person who's actually become blessed, and there's so many devotees you see, that they've actually become blessed by this potency of Krishna because they've just given their life to preaching Krishna. They're Krishna conscious in the sense that they just dedicate their activities to propagating Krishna consciousness. And they're able to give the holy name to others. You see that. They'll be coming down the street doing Harinam. I've seen this with so many different devotees. And I remember recently, I think it was in 2007, I was in San Jose. There's a really nice devotee there called Vaisheshika Prabhu. And you can see, he is able to inspire others to chant the holy name of Krishna. Just like when he leaves Kirtan, the people just like dancing and chanting, they're so happy. Krishna Shakti Vinanahi. He's been blessed by a Shakti of Krishna because of his... It doesn't mean he's a Nitya Siddha pure devotee. It doesn't mean that. But because he's got this determination, he's dedicated to serving Krishna, he's giving his life and soul to serving Krishna, Krishna blesses him with a Shakti. And there's many, many great souls like that in this movement. And that is the qualification to being effective, is this Krishna Shakti Vinanahi. Because the only person who can really preach is Krishna. The only person who can actually change a person's consciousness is Krishna. We can't do it. We are incapable of doing it. But when one is connected to Krishna, it's just like you can hold a light bulb in your hand for the rest of your life and you'll never illuminate it. But as soon as you plug it into the power socket, comes a light. So in the same way, you can discuss this philosophy of Krishna until you're old and grey, but if you don't have this potency of Krishna, if you're not blessed by Krishna to be able to present this philosophy, it'll have no effect. So that is my belief on what is the difference. Is if a person has actually been blessed by that Shakti of Krishna, they'll have effect. But without that, and we see that Srila Prabhupada, one man had so much effect. Why? Because he was blessed by the Shakti of Krishna. Krishna had given him that potency to be able to propagate Krishna consciousness. And we see that with anyone who's been blessed by this potency of Krishna, that they have so much effect. One person, Prabhupada opened how many temples? They say 108, but it was around 100 temples. One person. How old was he when he started? In his 70s? He'd already, he had a heart attack on the boat on the way to America. Extraordinary achievement. Translated, 60 volumes of books. Would sleep 2-3 hours a day. I mean, who's tried to sleep 2-3 hours a day? How do you feel after a week? Just completely destroyed. Just like exhausted. So it's obvious that Prabhupada was blessed with Krishna's Shakti. So anyone, you can give a certificate. They have Bhakti Shastris and Bhakti Vaibhav and Bhakti Sarvabhauma and Bhakti Vedanta and this thing and that thing, and we give our diplomas in Archan, etc., etc. That doesn't mean... There was an interesting experience I had. This is a long time ago, and of course things have changed. There was one place that was conducting their Bhakti Shastri course, and one boy, he was coming up, and he finished his exam paper, he was handing his exam paper, and he saw an exam paper on the desk, and he noticed, oh, that's the right answer. I didn't get that answer. So he went back and crossed his answer and wrote in that answer. And he won. He got the highest mark. So, according to the certificate, he was the most knowledgeable. But the reality was, he cheated. So just a piece of paper doesn't make someone a devotee. Just a piece of paper doesn't qualify one to be enabled to propagate Krishna consciousness. No, it's something to do with the heart. You actually have to have this heart. You actually have to have this firm attachment for Krishna. And through this cultivation of attachment for Krishna, this raga, then one becomes blessed with Krishna's Shakti. And in that way, you're able to propagate God consciousness. So yeah, sure, Krishna could certify. He gives so many certificates. What's the value of the certificate if it's not there in the heart? It's a process of the heart. It's not a process of the mind. Through cultivation of knowledge, because it's jnana, through cultivation of knowledge, one can affect the heart, one can change the heart. But when the heart is changed, it becomes vijnana. And that's what Ratha, realized knowledge, means we actually put it into action. And that's the difference. Sorry, a little bit long-winded answer, but it's a very important topic. Anything else? Okay, thank you so much. Kantara Shrima Bhagavatam Ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Jai Nitya Gaura Prema Nandini.